Welcome to the Real Film Nerds Podcast.
Happy Oscarheimer week, everyone. For those of you who do not know, the Academy Awards were this past Sunday, and Oppenheimer fucking cleaned house, to put it mildly. But anyways, we will get into that later on for Real Film Nerds Podcast, episode number 364, The Zone of Interest, another Academy Award nominated Best Picture Film Movie Catch-Up Podcast thingamabobber. With me as always, my good buddy, co-host, yes, Lisa. Mike is my co-host. God, that's an inside joke. Not really, but kind of.
Okay. Yes, co-host it is.
Mike, how are you, sir? Did you watch the Academy Awards?
I did not. I did not get a chance to watch the Academy Awards. You know, it's past my bedtime, Matt. You know, we talk about my bedtime a lot on the show or on the pod, and it's true. I go to bed early, and I live out on the East Coast, so the Eastern time zone, man, this stuff's on super late, man. I guess they delay it for you guys, though, right? The West? Or did you watch it live, man?
I watched it kind of live. I recorded it and then fast-forwarded through commercials and speeches. But it started at 4 o'clock in the afternoon here.
Yeah. See? 4 o'clock.
So that would have been 7 o'clock your time, because you had the time change on Sunday.
Yeah. Yes. On top of that, we had the time change. Those poor actors, you know, they had to deal with that too. Everyone had to deal with that, except for Arizona and Hawaii and I think the territories.
Yeah, well, dude, it just means that they were drunker.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They were looking at their packet, right? Don't they get some sort of like, you're going to the Oscars, here's your like package or whatever, and they give them like all these expensive gifts?
Yeah, I think that's only certain celebrities, and that's in like a private room in the back, and you know,
okay.
It's next to the hand job room.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, you always get that one mixed up, Mike.
Yeah,
you go get your package, and then you go to the hand job room and get your package worked over.
Gotcha. That's true. you can't screw up the happy ending order.
So, all right, before we get into this super serious, very incredible film, let's touch a little bit more about the Academy Awards for 2024. We won't go too in-depth on this, because if you want to watch them, look up the stats. I think it's personally one of the best performances they've had of the awards show in multiple years. It was nice having Jimmy Kimmel on there. He didn't get too political. He got pretty political at a few times, which was fun, making fun of Trump and things like that, but they weren't too like bad or risque. The speeches, actually, I found out later after the fact, they had talks with all the nominees that they needed to tighten up their speeches and not try and get too political, and it worked because there wasn't a whole lot of it and the speeches really weren't super long. Shout out to Robert Downey Jr.'s speech. He probably had one of the best ones I've ever seen. Nominated 4 times, and he finally won his Academy Award on his 4th one. Well deserved. I thought he did a great job. But Oppenheimer won 7. I don't know how many Poor Things got, but it got more than it should have. Emma Stone did a fantastic job, but I still am kind of upset because a film that I thought was up there next to Oppenheimer was not Poor Things. It was Killers of the Flower Moon, and it got snubbed. It did not get one frickin' award.
Yeah, no, a lot of things kind of got snubbed.
Maestro is another one.
Yeah, Maestro got snubbed. Like, I was surprised makeup. Although I haven't seen Poor Things, man, was the makeup on the same level as Maestro?
No.
I mean, like,
no, I think the makeup was better on Maestro. There was some pretty hardcore makeup in Poor Things, like specifically like Willem Dafoe. His makeup was pretty difficult, but outside of that, I wouldn't say there was anything super hardcore. I think Maestro probably should have had it, just for the giant fake nose that didn't look that fake, but everybody talked about it. One, I have to say, I loved Oppenheimer all around. I really like that movie. But as far as it winning for cinematography, it was good. I'm not saying it was bad. It was very good, but I don't think it was the best cinematography of the year. Not at all.
Which movie would you have given best cinematography to?
Dude, honestly, I mean, either Maestro or Poor Things. I know that's a loaded one because I'm not a huge fan of Poor Things at all, really. But everything about that film was excellent other than the story.
Yeah. You said you hated the story. I'm going to try and watch it, man. It's on Hulu. I haven't had a chance.
Yeah, not to keep stammering, but I was thinking maybe we should hold off a little bit. Although I really don't want my mom to watch it. Like, I really don't. Like, I wouldn't mind doing it for the podcast, but I really don't want her to watch it. So maybe you should watch it and we'll just talk about it on our own, just kind of for the heck of it. But what do you think about American Fiction, man? Tucson, you know, I'm not born, but a Tucson raised journalist winning a best adapted screenplay for American Fiction.
Dude, that was great. That was great. I didn't know if it... Dude, I really liked that movie.
It was very good.
Really good.
Very good.
It was very good.
Well, 2023, honestly, I don't know your opinions, Mike, but 2023 has been one of the better film years we've had in a while. I mean, out of the 10 Best Picture nominees, I've seen 8 of them, and I think I've given at least 4 or 5 of them 4.5s. And I never give 4.5s or higher.
Yeah, no, that movie was great, man. So I'm glad it got some recognition. I know it was pretty much just Oppenheimer kind of getting everything. So
Oppenheimer and Poor Things dominated, and I think Killers of the Flower Moon, I gave that, I believe, a 4.5. I think that was on the level of Oppenheimer. I thought it was better than Poor Things. But The Holdovers, I really, really liked. I know you haven't watched that yet, but that's really good. A lot of these films, American Fiction, I think, I don't know if I gave that a 4.5 or a 4, but I really liked American Fiction as well. Everybody got at least a little something, but, the film that, this is a good segue, the film that I was really, really worried about, but it did it. It got a big nod. Best International Feature, The Zone of Interest, the film we're talking about today. And as you know, yes, Best Sound. And it deserved that one by far. I wasn't sure about the International Feature. They had some stiff competition, but they got it. And well-deserved, because as we roll into our review of The Zone of Interest, this film is terrible. It's horrible. It's terrifying. It's dramatic. And that's the point. It is fantastic.
All right.
So,
well, I guess with that, dude, should I just go into the
give us the breakdown,
rundown?
Mike? Let's do it.
All right. So, Zone of Interest was directed by Jonathan Glazer. It was written by Jonathan Glazer and based on a novel by Martin Amis. And the movie is starring Christian Friedel, Sandra Hohler, Johan Cartas, Louis Noah Witt, and an Auschwitz commandant, Rudolf Haas and his wife Hedwig strive to build a dream life for their family in the house in a garden beside the camp.
Okay, Mike, so I think I already gave my first impressions. What's yours?
It's a really good movie, man. It's moving, and it's interesting the approach that was taken.
Okay. I think this movie is absolutely incredible and terrible at the same time, because movies like this have to exist, and that's sad. But if we don't learn from our past, we are doomed to repeat it, and that was one of the points of Jonathan Glazer's speech last night when he accepted the award for International Feature Film. This movie is frightening because, as you probably should know by now, people have talked about it since the movie came out. I think it came out in December, but its wide release was February of this year. So, you know, a couple weeks ago was its wide release across the U.S. You never truly see the terror and the horrors and the shock factor that's going on the other side of the wall in Auschwitz, which is a completely different take that most filmmakers have done for Holocaust-type inspired films like Schindler's List or even Saving Private Ryan, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, stuff like that. They specifically have the shock and the horror to show how awful this, you know, time period was and what the Germans really, and the Nazis, not Germans, but what the Nazis did to an entire race and religion. And it's horrible.
Oh, yeah. No, it was... Whew, man, it's super intense in such an interesting way, Matt. And the sound, and I'm glad they won for their sound. Like, the sound of this movie was amazing.
If they wouldn't have won Best Sound, I would have protested. I would have been really mad because it's insane, especially if you dig into it. Did you look into any of the trivia on it?
No, but it was so good. It was so amazing. I was like, holy crap, man. Like, this is, it's like disturbing at the same time, but it added so much. It was like a character of the movie. Like, I think you even said that.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's definitely a big character in this film. So, I'll do a little bit of trivia. I don't think it's too many spoilers, but, so the sound design, specifically the sound outside of the walls, not the things that the actors were doing and saying, they spent, I think, 2 or 3 years going around Europe recording actual sounds. So, like, some of the screaming and yelling and fighting and gunshots, all of it is real. Real stuff that really is going on. So, like, someone screaming and yelling is, like, for instance, possibly a drunk guy walking down the street.
So, okay.
It's
interesting.
It's pretty wild that that's how they did the sound.
Dude, that is really wild. But I mean, I guess it's cool that it's authentic, but man, so much time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, years.
They put a lot of time into this. One thing that's really interesting about this film as well, you alluded to it earlier, is that it is based on a novel. The novel is actually a fiction novel. The people that are named in the novel are not real people. And so one of the... I don't know if it was a writer or producer or what, spent a very long time, including the director, because I think it was just the director, Jonathan Glazer, that adapted the screenplay, but yet also did the directing. He must have had some production people helping him out as well, but they basically tried to make it historical. So, like, that's why they, you know, named like Rudolf Haas as the main character and his wife Hedwig and the kids. And those are all real people. And in the novel, they're all fictional. It's not truly based on Auschwitz or anything like that. It's loosely kind of, but the stories are very true. Now, this film, everything that happens in it supposedly is exaggerated to a lot of levels because they don't have a whole lot of, you know, things down on the actual stories. But from if you listen to historians and stuff talk about it, they're like, they knocked it out of the park historically. Like, this is exactly what it would have been like.
Wow. I don't know, man. It was very gripping, but it's hard to watch.
It's
just because it's just a lot.
It's terrifying, you know? Dude. It's just terrifying. Just especially since this family is being raised in the shadow of all these incredibly horrible atrocities, and these children are hearing it.
Oh yeah, no, it was. I think I'll get us to our next segment with spoilers because I didn't want to spoil anything.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's historically based to a degree, but it's this movie's fiction but nonfiction at the same time. It's kind of weird like that. And I'll get into that example because it's at the end of the film. But yeah, go ahead, Mike. Let's get to your segments, please, sir.
Okay. All right. So, Matt, what are you drinking this fine morning, evening, afternoon?
Well, Mike, I have a couple more of these left in the fridge, and I keep burping. God, this is why I got to stop doing What Are You Drinking? Because I keep burping and not wanting to do it in the mic. But I have a couple more of these. I like this. This is a good beer, and I don't want to drink them too fast. But Huss Brewing Company, I'm drinking another one of their Papago Blueberry Wheat beers. It's not an ale. It just says Blueberry Wheat.
Nice. Nice, dude. Well, I'm drinking one of those India Pale Ales, IPAs.
Did you like that GIF I sent you the other day about that?
Yeah.
That was pretty funny,
was
right?
Yeah, funny, dude. Yeah, yeah. So it's called Juicy Monkey Hazy Imperial IPA, and it's from Victory Brewing.
Sounds dirty. Juicy Monkey?
Hey.
You were going to say that's what she said.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I'm just going to leave it.
All righty. Very good, Mike. Moving on.
Yep. Moving on.
It's hard to have humor in a podcast about the Holocaust. So moving on. Mike, what? Speaking of humor, God, I did not set that up very well.
No, you didn't.
It's horrible. Absolutely horrible. Mike, what is this week's hopefully not topic-related dad joke?
I got dad jokes. I don't think they understand, though. Gotta think I'm funny. Other people never laugh, though. Dad jokes.
Yeah, no, I decided that it wouldn't be worthwhile to try and figure one out for our the current topic of this movie. So here is our dad joke. Why did the Scarecrow win an award?
Because he was just outstanding in the field. He was the best in his field.
There you go, dude. You got it.
I got it. I put two and two together. So he's the best in his field.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down. That's going to be one of our topics for the day. Matt wins at dad jokes. Matt wins dad joke.
All right.
Got it.
Good job, dude.
So, all right, Mike, I know this next one was difficult, and luckily I was here to save the day. But, Mike, how does this foreign film, The Zone of Interest, relate to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
All right, Matt. Yes, with your assist, I was able to come up with somebody who relates to the MCU. I was worried on this one, Matt. I was really worried. Not very many people in this movie, you know, but luckily Matt came through and we found Dominic Watton, who was second unit director on this movie and was a assistant producer on Captain America Civil War.
So, yeah, I don't know if I can really take credit because I just clicked on a link faster than you did, but I'll own it. I'll own it, Mike. But, yeah, this film, it's a foreign film. It's foreign actors. Jonathan Glazer is Scottish?
I don't know. That sounds right.
Yeah, I think he's Scottish. He's definitely from the UK. The film is from the UK. I thought it was going to be under the banner of maybe like Germany or Poland. But maybe it's just because the director is from UK, and that's probably where they filmed a lot of the scenes that were not at Auschwitz. I'm not sure where they built the sets. But anyways, I'm not going to get too crazy into that. Mike, we are now into our spoiler section per usual. And you wanted to spoil it, so go for it, man.
Well, you know, we get introduced to these characters, and they're making the best of their life with the situation they have, and in some ways are enjoying some of the stuff. And the Hedwig, the
wife,
command the wife,
the commandant's wife,
mom comes to stay and I guess help out at the house or something.
I think she was just visiting and seeing how well her daughter was doing and the grandkids and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
She's visiting and she like can't handle it. like what's going on, and like you see her kind of like falling apart, like in the movie, and I thought that was really, really good storytelling, because she just never does she say anything really, but it's just you see her sometimes, and like there's a part where she was just like passed out drunk, like because she just couldn't handle it, like it was. And then she leaves, and there's a note, and we never know what's on the note. And then her daughter takes it and burns it.
Yeah, it's interesting because she didn't even tell anyone. Like, she literally just was at her wit's end and left in the middle of the night. She was just like, fuck this, I'm out. And Hedwig, on the flip side, I don't want to say is embracing what's going on, because she's not. I think she's ignoring it, but she's definitely embracing the fruits of her husband's labor. How's that? You know, that yeah. It's a nice house. It's a nice garden. They have a pool. They're going on little trips down to the river. They're living a normal-ish, well-off person's life. Like, for that time period, they're clearly very well off, and that's what they're doing in the shadow of this horrible atrocity, and she's just trying to turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what was messing with her mom even more than just the atrocities, is the fact that her daughter is just kind of like, well, I love my new fur coat, fuck it, you know.
Yeah. I think some of that, yeah, for sure. I mean,
I'm just snowballing here. I don't know the truth.
Yeah. But like in the night when the room lights up and it's like the
furnaces. Yeah.
Dude,
I'm getting fucking chills just thinking about it. So do you still have your Bose surround sound, right?
Yeah.
Did you have it pretty cranked up for this?
Well, so I wasn't able to, I have to watch these movies at night when my kids are asleep. So I put on, I have my AirPods Pros or whatever, but they have spatial audio.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. No, so, a good set of headphones. If you can't, just to throw this out there, not to get too much off topic, but, if you can't afford like a decent surround sound system, cause that's the best way to go. Mine's nothing fancy. Mine's only a few hundred bucks, but it's enough. It works decently. It's no Dolby Atmos yet. I'll get there. But if you can't afford like a really great or even mediocre sound system, a good set of headphones, truly a good set of headphones, over the ear, in the ear, sound pods, whatever, if you can get them hooked up to your TV, DVD player, whatever you're watching stuff on, it's a great substitute. It really is.
Yeah, no, it's worked out well. Since the kids have been born, a lot of times if I'm watching stuff late and I want to watch it like at sound levels I would like, I have to watch it on, you know, like some other device, essentially, you know. So,
well, and this is a film that you got to have the best sound. You got to. I kind of wish I would have gone to the theaters for this one now, but I think my surround sound did a pretty gosh darn good job, because the whole time, you know, I have a decent subwoofer. It's nothing, it's not like $10,000 or anything crazy. It's decent, came with the system. But the constant low rumble through the entire film, I mean, it gives me chills, dude, thinking about it. It's so fucking eerie, because I had to look it up and confirm my suspicions on what that rumble is supposed to represent. Do you know what it is, Mike?
No.
It's supposed to be the ovens.
Oh, man.
That's how they just never turn them off. They're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's why you hear it in every single freaking shot. And it just, it's terrifying.
Yeah. No, I mean, most of the sound stuff was like, oh, I was like, man. I was like, this movie is, whew, but it's hard to watch, but man, did they do an amazing job on the sound.
Yeah. This is one of those ones that it's hard to watch, especially more than once. It's very good. It's very, very well done. And we talked about this earlier, but, okay. Let me bring the ending up, Mike. So at the very end of the film, you kind of get this picture of the Commandant Rudolf Haas kind of like gets almost like a vision, I think is what it's supposed to be, of the future and of the atrocities he does. And that's when it cuts to the real Auschwitz and the cleaning crew that's going through Auschwitz, you know, just preparing the museum for the next day's guests. And that really, really just, I don't know. It just really kind of sets home how this is not fake. Like, this really fucking happened. And it's, that just makes it even worse, you know?
Yeah, the only thing that I thought was a little bit odd about that was it cuts back to him.
Yeah, well, I think it's supposed to be his vision. Now, I don't think it's supposed to be, you know, obviously it's not real life. People can't see into the future. But I believe it's supposed to be him actually seeing that and experiencing that and seeing, I don't want to say the word trophies, but the remnants or the proof, I guess, of what he did that's left over in our current time. Makes sense?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. But like, he was also like coughing. Like, I think he was starting to have effects of living right next to all that, like in the ash and like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure. Like, well, thinking about it in a very like, I don't know, scientific way, it wouldn't be very good to be next to that place for very long.
No, and they're living there, and they're raising children there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like all kinds of cancery things would be happening.
Oh, I'm sure. But one thing that I do know, and this is tough. This is going to be tough to hear. The end of the film, they're talking about how he was going to be transferred out of Auschwitz and be like the commandant or like the commander of like all the camps, but they don't do it because they have 700,000 Hungarian Jews on their way to Auschwitz. Right? You remember that part?
Yeah.
At the end?
Yeah. That's when he has the big meeting, right? With all those other guys?
It's with the big meeting, and it's after that because they're like, because they were going to transfer him, and I don't think they did. I don't know historically. I'd have to look it up. But I do know this historically. The 700,000, that was true. They really did that. Guess how many of them they got through? And this is very unsettling.
I don't know, dude. Like 600?
Half a million.
Oh, man.
In 2 months, they genocided 500,000 people in that one camp. I mean, that is insane. And that is not a story. That is real. And that's, dude, it just makes me sick to my stomach. But that's the thing. People, I watching films and stuff like this is not condoning it. It is learning about it and learning about the past so the mistakes are not made again. And that's why shit like this needs to be made and needs to be watched. And I started the podcast with that, and that's where I'm at now.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, it's sickening. It's terrible. It's awful. But if you don't know that shit like this has happened, you're doomed to repeat it. That's proven historically time and time again. So anyways, Mike, anything else you want to add about the Zone of Interest? Should people watch it? Or do you think it's, you know, okay to watch? Or do you think it's too much? Or I think it's not for the faint of heart, personally. You have to know what you're getting into when you're watching this film. You just have to. And if you can't, you know, stomach some of these atrocities, even though you don't see them, I think the imagination makes it even worse. I'd say don't watch it because it's tough.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, it's got the syndrome where it shows you just enough to get your imagination going. So it's terrifying. Like it's even worse. It's like, it's just so like Matt, just a quick example in the movie. It's like, the boots.
Yep.
I was like, oh,
yep. Just that one scene. Yep. It just gets your mind going. It does. And that's the thing, your imagination. That's why, you know, it's always good to read novels and books and stuff, or listen to audiobooks and all that stuff, is because the things your imagination does are 100,000 times more than anything people have put, you know, pen to paper on screen, you know?
Yeah. Just that scene. I mean, there are several scenes in the movie that it's just like, it was so well done, because it just felt like it was kind of like a day in the life, or a couple weeks. I don't know what the timeline's supposed to be, but like, it just felt like a day in the life. But it's like, oh, this is a rough day.
If I had to guess, just based on the weather changes, I would say it's probably takes place over at least 9 months, maybe a year, because there's scenes where they're clearly summertime and they're going to the, you know, river, and they're going to the lakes, and they're swimming in the pools. And then there's time where the pool's frozen and they're walking in snow, especially when he's at like the meetings in Germany and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it probably takes place over 9 months, a minimum, probably a year, year and a half, maybe maximum, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about the cinematography, and then we can give our ratings, Mike, because I know you just let out a big yawn. You got to go to bed.
Yeah.
So they shot this film in a very interesting way as well. Jonathan Glazer put cameras all over the place. Now, they weren't so much like hidden, but they didn't have cameras with crews behind them. And so they were like in the bushes, and you can watch some of the behind the scenes stuff about it. They put them all over the place, and some are more hidden than others and everything, but they were mostly like the small form factors, so they're not like the big honking cinema cameras, but they're still like Reds and stuff. They're still high quality cameras. There's just a lot of them. And then him and the rest of the behind the camera staff and production crew and stuff were in a big trailer watching all the screens, and that's where they were doing their directing and everything from. And the idea behind that was to have it be more almost feel like a play, because, you know, there's no one telling you what to do or how to do it or all this.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's interesting.
Pretty interesting, right? And it was very successful. I think a lot of the shots in this are very good.
Yeah. There was some pretty good shots, man.
Yeah. Very, very, very good. So. All right, Mike. Well, I know you need to go to bed. I think we could talk about this for a while, but I think we got everything out we wanted to say. It's a incredible movie. And a terrible movie at the same time. And it makes you feel something from beginning to end. And that's when you know it is an incredible film. So, Mike, with that said, how many reels do you give The Zone of Interest?
So I'm going to give it 4.5 reels. It was really good and awe-inspiring. It's just not the thing that you want to go watch all the time.
Yep, Mike, I 100% agree. I give it 4.5 reels. This is another one of the Best Picture nominees that just was amazing. It was truly 2023 was a very good year for film. It really was.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yep.
It was just, it's just tough.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's very difficult. Just like Schindler's List. Incredible movie.
Yeah.
Killed it at the Academy Awards. Incredibly difficult to watch.
Yeah.
I think I've only seen Schindler's List maybe twice. Maybe.
I think I've seen once and then a part of it. It's brutal.
When it first came out, we were quite young. I think we were in middle school, high school, maybe early high school.
I think it was early high school.
And that was one where I saw snippets of it as it came out on DVD and Blu-ray, not DVD and Blu-ray back then, VHS back then, or on TV snippets. And my mom was like, nope, you can't watch that right now. But then in college and older, I sat down and watched the whole thing all the way through. And it's tough, dude. It's tough. It's an incredible film, just like this, but it's difficult to watch. So, all right, Mike, next week, after such a difficult film, I figured we need to watch something more upbeat. Even though it was one of your picks, I agreed to it. Why don't you tell us about Arthur the King?
Dude, Arthur the King. It's got Marky Mark in it. Or, I mean, I don't even know if anybody remembers that anymore. But Mark Wahlberg used to be in a band called Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Look it up. It's fun. Mark Wahlberg's character is like competing in a some sort of, I don't know, Iron Man type thing.
I think they call it Epic Endurance Race. So it's Iron Man on steroids.
Oh, Iron Man on steroids, yeah. Huh?
Because it's over like multiple countries and hundreds of miles instead of like 50.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, the Iron Man or whatever, that's just lame. That's lame.
No, dude, I'm not going to be caught doing any of that shit.
So, yeah. Marky Mark is in this, and there is a dog that he stumbles upon during this race, and it ends up being like a... Like they run into it again and it ends up helping them or some way. I'm not exactly sure what exactly, but it, you know, it looks like it'll be an incredible movie about how people's bond with animals and all that stuff. Kind of a tearjerker movie, I think, but I think it's going to be fun.
No, I think it's going to be an inspirational film. I think it's going to be a feel good, inspirational film. And you do know it's based on a true story.
Yeah, well, that makes it cooler.
Yeah, that makes it even more, you know, amazing. But it has a good cast, man. Mark Wahlberg, Simu Liu, Natalie Emmanuel. I think it'll be a good movie. I'm hoping. We need something a little more uplifting for this next week. And I think this will be it, hopefully.
Yeah. I think the other movie I gave you a choice, though, Matt, looked extremely depressing. So probably this was the better choice.
Yeah, the other film, it looks really good. I'll be honest with you. I don't think my mom's getting at her theater, and I'm afraid for her to watch it because of its topic. It deals with Alzheimer's, and my mom is having a real hard time with that kind of shit right now, you know, especially after watching Zone of Interest and everything. It really brought up memories of her dad, and, you know, that's what he passed away from and stuff. So I don't think that would be a good one for her to watch, but I wouldn't mind watching in the future though anyways. But Mike, I'm excited. I know what we're going to do for the week after, and we will have to talk about that. It's not going to be a theater movie. It's a movie I've been really looking forward to though, but we'll talk about that next week's pod.
Okay. All right. Hold it back, man. Hold it back. Simmer down.
Yes, sir. It'll be good. It'll be fun.
Okay. All right. So, with that, I think thanks for listening, everybody, on this Oskenheimer pod, right?
Oskarheimer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Oskarheimer. Yeah, that's a good one,
that's
dude.
Good.
Good job, man. Thanks for listening, everybody, and make sure to follow us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever it's called, and we'll catch you on the next pod. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Real Film Nerds. Now, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Real Film Nerds. Now, go out and catch a movie.
Welcome, everyone, to Ma Hinshaw Loses Her Cookies, episode 54, Zone of Interest. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
Why did you say it like that?
Because that's how I said it. Why? What?
Because I'm crazy? You said, hi, Matt. How's it going? Like, have you been drinking? Seriously, Mom, how much do you drink?
Yes, I had an entire Fanta orange. Yes. I've really been on the sauce.
Fanta orange and vodka or bourbon or gin or
no.
What?
Well, that might be tasty with gin, but no, just plain old. Well, it's the stuff in the bottle from Mexico, maybe that's what's wrong. I don't know. Anyway.
So it has cocaine in it.
Oh, good. I hope not. Oh, well, fentanyl? Anyway. We did get it in Bisbee. Well, Frank treated me to a Fanta. And I can't drink the whole thing. So anyway.
So okay. In other words, Frank's dad treated you to a Fanta.
There you go.
That's where that money came from.
Probably so. Anyway, guys, you have got to go see this movie. It was
What's the movie?
Zone of Interest.
The Zone of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Best Picture nominee for the 2024 Academy Awards, right?
I think they said Best Foreign Film.
So it was a Best Picture nominee for the 2024 Academy Awards. Yes, it won Best International Film. You are correct. But the reason why we are reviewing it here on this podcast is because it was a Best Picture nominee. And I've said that.
Okay, good. Got that.
I've said it multiple times on the radio. I've said it multiple times on the podcast. And I've now said it multiple times on your podcast.
Now, the one interesting thing about it is in all German. That was kind of interesting. Lots of reading to do, but it's well worth it. It was very, very good. And the interesting part to me was that they were conveying the awfulness of Auschwitz without showing bodies and, you know, the ovens and things. It just was very subtle. But very good. I thought it was very good. And I was surprised to think that Hess lived, well, not on the property, because I think they had housing for the people who worked there on Auschwitz proper. But he didn't. He lived outside in a house very near the wall. Which is why you could hear gunshots. You could hear the dogs barking at times. And you could see the smoke from the furnaces. And anyone who has a modicum of interest in Oxford should watch it. It's just very good. Did you like it, Matt?
Of course I did. I think this is a terrible film, but a good film.
Yes. It's so sad. And it's the one thing that got me was the fact they kept saying what they had planted gardens outside and everything was just growing fantastically well. And I'm sitting there going, well, it was probably from the ashes that would float from, you know, the ovens or whatever that would make them grow bigger. It was amazing how big their gardens were and lush and everything. And the children, raising those children right there. Oh, my goodness. I mean, the smaller children probably didn't really understand. But I know that one daughter, Sophie, I believe she understood because she tried to throw apples or push them through the wall to give them to the people until, you know, things got, nope, you can't do that anymore because the people get shot for going and grabbing this stuff. But anyway, and I thought it was very interesting how the little boy would look out the window when the ovens were going and there was this red glow, very interesting photography there. The house itself really captured the feelings of houses back then. They liked it. It was very nice, but they had wooden floors and, you know, clunked around. And they had a worker that would come, I guess you would call her maid, and help with the housing, care of the kids, etc. I mean, this was just a very fascinating look at a gentleman who was in charge for several years at Auschwitz. He was a colonel, correct, Matt?
I don't know what his rank was. He was commandant. I know that.
Commandant. Okay. Well, anyway, he was really high up and in quite in charge for that amount of time.
But, and, okay, a couple things. You said there was a worker in the home. I'm pretty sure that was not a worker. And there was more than one. Why do you think the garden was growing so well? Because not because of the ashes, because they had several people tending to it and working it. If you paid attention, there's a scene where there's someone actually working in the garden or maybe outside the garden. I don't remember. And it was one of the people from the camp. And so I think
that's
most
what
of
I thought, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to say that. Okay. So, yes, it was people from the camp. Yes. And I think the part near their wall was probably, there were three parts of Auschwitz, and one of them was they used people to work in a factory or something, making, I don't know, weapons or something. They didn't treat them nicely. Most of them were, you know, starved to death, but at least they were alive versus the other people where they just dropped the people off and gassed them and then, you know, cremated them. And the trains kept coming and coming. It was just a very, very effective movie. And, you know.
Okay, so let's see. Let me go back. They did not show any gassing whatsoever. They did not show any cremation whatsoever. They did not show any trains whatsoever. So what are you talking about? History?
Well, you could hear the trains. You couldn't see them.
You could hear lots of things, Mom. That's the point of the film.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. You could hear that. You didn't see the trains, but you could hear it. Yeah. Anyway, I highly suggest you watch it. Very disturbing and very sad. But I think we all need to know if people do not know about Auschwitz and what it was like. And I'm proud of the people who made it, and I'm very glad they won. It was very good. And I'm not sure, did it come out on Holocaust? They had one day where they honor the people, you know, the Holocaust and everything. I'm not sure if it was January or February, but anyway.
So if this movie came out in 2024,
it would not have
been in the Academy.
Right. That's true.
Go ahead.
I'm old. Right?
No, I am just tired of you talking over me when I'm trying to talk and not letting me finish.
Yes, please finish.
As I was stating before I was interrupted and talked over, this film officially came out in 2023, or else it would not have been in the 2023 Academy Awards.
Yep, and I didn't think of that. My bad. I'm sorry, that is my mistake. Anyway. Yes. So I think you will find it very interesting. I'm not sure what I thought about the photography per se, but it was good. And I really felt bad for the children, but they did all right. And there's not much more I can say about it, really. I don't want to say everything, you know. All right.
Okay, are you done talking then?
Yes.
I don't know. Okay,
yeah.
So would you recommend people see this film then?
I would, if you're not faint of heart and you can handle that. Yes, I would see it. Mm-hmm.
So it what is faint good. Of heart? A lot of people do not know what that terminology means.
If you get really upset with sad things, you know. I don't know if I would go, but if not, I would definitely watch it. Because it was very good. And that's all I can say.
Okay. So you recommend everybody to go see it. It's a great film, but a terrible film at the same time.
Right. It's sad. Very.
Sad doesn't even begin to describe it.
No,
but okay.
Not really. Not really. It doesn't.
I mean, one of the most atrocious genocides this planet has ever seen, and it's just sad. It's a lot more than sad.
No, it is. It's a lot more than sad. And they give the statistics in the movie of... I did not know that they... I'm not sure if it was 70,000. I will not quote that, but it says in there that a lot of people from Hungary... And
okay, so I talked about this on the radio. It was not 70. You're missing a zero.
Oh, really?
It was 700,000 people. That is how they end the film.
700,000? Oh, my golly. Oh, my golly. No, I thought it said 70. That's bad. Oh, my golly. That's horrific. Yes, it's just horrific. And people need to understand what they did.
Can I finish my thought, please?
Yes.
Because two people cannot talk at once on a podcast, or else no one hears it at all. Okay? I tried to explain that to you before, Mom. So, it was 700,000 people is how they end the film, is that they do not want to transfer him out of Auschwitz because they have 700,000 Hungarian Jews, or I assume most of them were Jews. It could have been other things that, because they didn't just, you know, genocide Jews. They killed a lot more than just Jews. But the bulk of it was the Jewish people. And so they had 700,000 of them that they were transferring, shipping, moving, marching, who knows, from Hungary. And they said, basically, we're not going to transfer you because we have all of them and they need to be taken care of efficiently. According to historical documents and historians and things that I've read and listened to, that is true. That is the way they ended the film, and that is very true. And in 2 months, this was towards the end of the war, in 2 months, they had executed 500,000 of them. In 2 months.
Unbelievable.
In one camp at Auschwitz.
That's just horrible.
That is a historical fact. That is not made up in the film.
It's not made up, yes. Well, I got the number. I thought 70,000 was wrong, but I was wrong. Ugh. Anyway, please do go see this movie. Be very, very interesting and edifying to you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, with all that said, how many cookies do you give it?
I give it 4. Or did I give it 4.5? I'm not positive. I might have given it 4.5.
Well, if you were using the app that I asked you to use, you would know because you could look it up.
Oh, that's true. But anyway, in there, 4 or 4.5. Okay.
Well, which one is it? You need to make a definitive decision.
4.5. 4.5. I believe I did 4.5. Yeah.
This is your podcast. Okay. You can do what you want.
Okay.
So 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then next week, we're talking about the movie Arthur the King, right?
Right.
You're going to go see that in the theaters with Michael or Dad?
Probably Dad, because Michael's been working quite a bit. But I'm going, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be good. I hope it's good. Okay?
All right.
Alrighty.
Anything else you want to add about the Zone of Interest?
No, I don't think I better.
You don't think you better, or you don't want to? There's two different things.
Well, I don't want to give away everything, you know, in the movie. I think I've covered enough. Now you need to go see it. There you go.
Well, it's your podcast, Mom. You need to make the decision if you're done talking or not.
Yes, I am finished. Yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, then, thank you, everyone, for listening to Ma Hinshaw Loses Her Cookies, episode number 54. Next week, Arthur the King, only in theaters, I believe, starring Mark Wahlberg and a puppy. So we will chat with you then. Have a good rest of your week, and definitely go check this film out. It is very good and terrible at the same time.
Bye.